All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It's the Tornado Tony Finico.
And Strike.
Oh, breaking up a little bit. What's your name again, Tom?
Breaking up is hard to do.
Psychic Tom Padgett.
There we go.
Where to go?
All right. There it is. All right. Did you predict Trump was going to win?
Believe it or not, last July, when everything was going haywire, I did an oracle called the I Ching. And it was hexagram number 51, Thunder. It said, be prepared for a shakeup.
Whoa.
And I don't use that thing very often, but I said, well, okay, things are going to be shook up, and it looks like they were.
A little bit.
He could channel his inner Muhammad Ali right now and be like, I shook up the world!
I'll say this much. And there would be an entertainment factor to either one of them. But he won't need a press secretary. He'll be his own press secretary in the Comedy Channel and on his ratings. I mean, this is...
He's done it before, right?
World-class entertainment.
Yeah.
Whether you love him, hate him, agree with him, disagree with him, you've got to admit, there's never been a thing quite like
that. Yeah, it's definitely a unique situation. and actually, Tony, I have a protest organized for right outside your house later tonight. So I read your Facebook post about all your friends unfriending you because you said you voted for Trump. So now we know who to blame. I was kidding. Are you still bent out of shape about that, Tony? What? We lose you? Oh, there you are. Say that again? Man, you guys are breaking up. Hold on, Tony. Hold on. Start over. Can you hear me?
Me?
Yeah. Start over.
I can hear you.
All right. You got all garbled.
I was saying, I think part of the reason he won was his a late campaign stop at my Halloween party.
There you go.
Awesome.
And then I got a picture of him. But you know, it was funny because, I mean, when I was first growing up, I always said, you know, I was middle of the road, you know, and I would kind of go whichever way with the person I identified with more. But I always felt myself, even when I was a kid, you know, with the Ronald Reagan, going always more towards the right. Not meaning the world was right, but you know what I mean. And this one was probably the most polarizing that I've ever been involved in my, you know, 26, a.k.a. 40 years. And I think part of the reason was these were two people that, you know, had a great sense of unlikability to them. You know, so it's like if you were with one, you were definitely against the other. Okay. And if you go back to four years ago when it was Obama and Romney, you see, you know, those were two guys that were very cordial to each other and it was very professional. This was all attack ads and it was very finger pointing. So you had to take one side. And I went with his side because I am so against her.
Yeah,
and
I think there's a lot of people like that.
My friend that came to my house dressed as Trump, and he's one of the funniest guys I know, and he's one of those people that very quick-witted. So we have, I don't know if they're around the country or just in my area, but these stores called Five Below, where you can buy anything in the store with $5 or less. I love the store because I always go there when it's Toys for Tots because you can get a couple different toys and drop them off in different bins for kids. But you can get some pretty cool stuff there. They got good history books there, and they have cool Christmas and Halloween shirts there. So he went to the one store, and he found coloring books for both candidates. Now, once again, being kind of slanted, the Hillary ones were very serious colorings, like because her shaking hands with people and being like the first lady and this and that and the Secretary of State. But the Trump ones was like a spoof. And his coloring book was, you know, one was him looking like Napoleon.
Huh.
One was him, one was him sitting like he was the Lincoln Monument. The other one was him as George Washington crossing the Delaware. Him as Elvis. Him as, you know, on the Sistine Chapel and all that. Well, my friend bought every one of them they had, went to another Five Below and bought every one of them they had. He gave me one. You tell me that's not going to be a collector's item.
Yeah, definitely.
You bet. You know, Tony, you're bringing up a good point, because 4 years ago, if you've got two guys that are cordial, that's like two guys in a pro wrestling match that aren't, you need a villain in there somehow. You need that, you know, grab the chair and smack them on the head. And this was pro wrestling at its best. I just was, when Biden called out Trump, wow, and Trump said he'd accept it. Now, you think of that pay-per-view. would that bust the box office? Tell me you guys wouldn't order that. Now, don't tell me you wouldn't order that.
Yeah, I wonder. I was actually wondering earlier today if Trump was looking for Biden when he went to the White House today.
Biden, you could tell Biden's got the spirit.
Yeah.
But Trump has the size, and I've fielded a lot of questions on this since I'm supposed to be the resident genius, which I'm not. But like I've said, if you have two untrained people, go with the bigger guy. It's just axiomatic. If they're both untrained. I mean, if you've got one trained fighter, that changes the equation. So the question is, would we do boxing, kickboxing, or MMA? Oh, my God. I'm having a visual now of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know the Secret Service would break it up, so. It can never happen. Anyway, it's crazy stuff. It's a very entertaining election cycle, that's for sure. But
and this is just beginning now. So yeah. Let's get the popcorn out.
Such a big shock, though, that he even was able to pull it off. Because, I mean, really, you know, there's just so much anti-Trump stuff at the end of the race. You thought he was just going to collapse, but he just could never die. I mean, he said so many things and got into so much trouble. And any other candidate, like, he would have definitely got blown out of the water by all that stuff.
Right.
By one of those things. And he just kept cruising through it. So I don't know how he did it.
I agree with that, you know. But here is the reason. If he would have did that, and you know what? And I'm going to take Obama out of the equation, you know, because, you know, I think because he was also a figure that really resonated to a lot of people. And I'm not saying that because of skin color or anything, because I know a lot of people of all different nationalities really took to him on the liberal side. I'll say Bill Clinton. If that would have been against Bill Clinton, Trump would have lost in a landslide. Almost Reagan Mondale type numbers from 1984. But the fact that he was able to say all those things and get away with it is more of a testament on how unlikable Hillary Clinton is.
Unfortunately. I think it's more the establishment than just her alone.
I've never felt so strongly much of a dislike for another, especially a person running for an office. And like I said, I've been a registered Republican since I was 18. And so we're going, what is that, 8 years now? Yeah, right, 20-some years now. But I've never felt so strongly against one person. And a lot of it was because of the manipulation, you know, the flat-out lies. You know, right. That's a big thing, flat-out lies. And they say, here's the one thing. They were talking to somebody last night at one of the protests on wall. I think it was a protest in New York, and the one guy's like, you know, she has a lot of experience. She has a lot of experience. And these are the exact words I said to my father, because my father and I were on the, you know, the same, you know, side. And I said, Pop, I said, you know, you're talking about, like, they're saying people have got a lot of experience. I said, a fighter that's 6'172 has got a lot of experience.
Exactly. Tony, great minds think alike. That analogy is coming to me.
Well, Trump said it himself. during one of the.
You know, I talk to you guys so much, I can almost feel your thoughts. You know,
I
mean, my God, that's so true.
I said, you know, hey, a guy stepped in the ring 178 times. He left 174. He's got experience.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Trump said during one of the debates, he said, you know, yeah, she got experience, but it's bad experience.
He did say that, yeah, because I watched all the debates, and, but you're right, and I think it resonated with more of her unlikability, and now, and I'm going to give you a perspective from the city of Philadelphia, because especially during the summer, I worked inside the city of Philadelphia, and thank God I am not working in Philadelphia right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was pretty fed up when I left anyway, and I only got to go there once every few months. But when they were about to have the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, it was my last week in the city. We were having SEPTA problems with our public transportation system. It was a mess. And then we're having people protesting our building because our CEO, who works at the company across the street, was part of the group that brought the DNC into Philadelphia, and they didn't raise enough funds. Then people were protesting because Hillary was getting the nomination, and it was supposed to, they thought it should have been Bernie Sanders, which actually I agree with.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, you know, 2020 is hindsight. But a lot of people in the news media were even saying, you know, it should have been Bernie because he would have had a better chance to win.
Well, that's the thing. Bernie was screwed out of the primary.
Yeah.
He was screwed. You look at everything, he should have won. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Tom. It was rigged. So he should have won that. And I'm sorry, I voted for Trump. He would not have won Bernie Sanders. That he would not have beaten Bernie Sanders. That might have been, once again, maybe not Trump, or not Trump, Reagan Mondale numbers, but it would have been pretty much considered a landslide.
Yeah. All right, well, we're not a politics show, so maybe we need to move on to another subject. Oh, man.
You know, we are saying that we always have our finger on the pulse of
everything,
you know,
right?
Yes.
World events.
Sometimes that we've talked other sports. We've talked football. We've talked baseball, hockey. You know, we've talked movies. Big movie coming out next week, by the way. You know, we're going to talk about that.
Bleed for this.
So we are a show that we touch on everything, you know, that do come in contact with combat sports. And you know what? And I'm going to tie this election right into combat sports. I'm not going to say pro wrestling. I'm not going to say like a 12-round or a 15-round fight. Here's my tie into it. What was the tipping scale for me to vote for Trump? The first fight I attended was at the Trump Plaza back in 1992, when it was the KO Magazine Fight of the Year. Michael Moore and Bert Cooper.
Yeah.
And on that card, I was privileged to see the sixth professional fight of a guy named Arturo Gatti.
Nice.
And I tied the election into boxing. There we go. Me.
Well, Trump is a big supporter of the combat sports, of course, and, you know, more boxing, I think, than UFC. But, you know, even Dana White spoke at the convention because he was just so grateful for Trump back in the early days of the UFC, giving the company a home for their fights at his facilities because nobody else would at the time. So.
Right, and I believe that was at Boring UFC 32 when it first got back on cable. And it was one of the worst events. Every one of them went to a boring decision. A lot of lay and pray stuff. But the fact is, Trump was there, and he did put it up in the old days to try to get things going again after the cable ban ended.
Mm-hmm.
So how could you not like him in that sense?
And then he had that failed investment there in Affliction. I got to ask a question during a conference call with him, so I'm definitely going to have to dig that up now because, I mean, there's all kinds of ways we could edit that. Because he said something about, I don't know, Rich, maybe in a year you'll tell me. Because, you know, I asked him about the investment. So, yeah, we could definitely rig that for the show introduction or something. We'll figure something out. But that's on my computer right next to me. I got to just boot it up and do a search and find that clip because I know I have it. But now I can say I interviewed the President of the United States. Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that. What is that, Rich? 1 degree of separation.
Yes.
Right?
I don't have to tell people he wasn't president at the time, right?
Um, You know what it reminds me of? That movie Independence Day, when Jeff Goldblum and Judd Hirst go to meet with Bill Pullman, and it's like, yeah, he punched him in the head. Like, you punched the president? He punched the president then.
Yeah. All right. So, big news in the UFC. I'm going to switch gears here. John Jones not only is banned for a year now after his positive test, which he blamed on something else, the supplement, I guess, and they did supposedly test the supplement, but it didn't help him like it helped a lot of other people when they used that excuse. And I don't know whether it's because of his history or what, but he's suspended for a year, stripped of the UFC light heavyweight interim title. I didn't even know he had that. I still thought Cormier had it, but I guess...
When he fought OSP, that's what that was for.
Oh, okay. All right, so...
It had to be his history, Rich. It had to be his history. Yeah. I think if they find out that the supplement was tainted, that's usually 6 months max. I just think it had to be all this other stuff factored into it.
And finally, I agree with Dana White on something. He says, greatest
not
talent... This is exact quote. Greatest talent ever and the biggest screw-up ever. That's what White called him. And it's true. I mean, he obviously does have talent. And to just blow it like that, it's just ridiculous.
All the stupid stuff. And the problem is, he's in his prime now. And we all know that's a short window in this business.
And at the same time, you know, I kind of feel like I should, you know, put in the little extra piece that, you know, it does happen. I mean, this stuff does happen to other people, and it does innocently happen. But, I mean, when you're making that much money, especially when, you know, you're getting paid the big bucks for the fights, you're getting sponsorships and all that, you know, maybe you should have all your shit tested yourself so you don't get busted for anything. Especially with all these new ingredients they've added to the banned substance list, you know. I mean, how hard is it to get somebody in there to test that stuff? Or just don't take the stuff, you know. Just use a natural diet or something. You know, what is with all these supplements that everybody thinks they need to take? I mean, I understand you're trying to look for every edge that's natural and everything that you can do under the rules, but I mean, with the way things are, you're better off. I'm paying the money to have somebody test the stuff than sitting out for a year and not making any money.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know how much it would cost, but I don't think that should be an item for them. I mean, it wouldn't think it could be that much.
Yeah, and maybe the UFC needs to step up and offer that service to these fighters or something to make sure that they don't. I mean, they have a whole guy that's in charge of their drug testing and everything and was supposed to put this whole plan in place, so... Maybe that's something they need to look at, because it's not the first time we've heard this, and it sounds like a legitimate situation, even though, you know, Jones has such a bad history of doing stupid shit, that, you know, it is something other people have been caught up in, not just fighters. Wrestlers going to the Olympics, and, you know, a lot of Olympic-style sports out there are getting caught up in these things, because they do... just change the list every now and then and just add things. I think it was something, I think a couple of years ago or last year, that just got added that a lot of people were getting popped for because it was legal and then they've made it illegal. I forget exactly what it was, but it was a popular...
You know, and I don't know if there's any check and balances on what this USADA does. I kind of wonder if they just went overboard.
Yeah.
I mean, and it just seems like they come up with anything they want, and it's like, F you, we make the rules, and too bad. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like it's out of control to me.
Right.
But what are you going to do? I mean, at this point, there's no, you can try to appeal it, but who do you appeal it? In front of them?
Yeah.
Talk about a kangaroo court.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see what happens with him if he takes it seriously, you know, keeps training again and, you know, sits out the time and comes back strong. I don't know. But, I mean, he's lost a lot of time that he can never get back. That's, you know, part of his prime fighting years. That just due to screw-ups. So hopefully, he gets his shit together. But, as far as getting the belt back, good luck. Daniel Cormier is going to be in there getting all this experience while you're on the bench. So, he's obviously going to improve. And, obviously, John Jones could improve, too, if he keeps training during his hiatus. But, how's he going to make money at this point? Who's going to sponsor a guy like that?
And I'd have to think all this stuff could not help but affect his marketability for product endorsements.
Mm-hmm.
Are they even allowed to do that with Reebok?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you could sue the company that provided the supplements without saying what's on the label. Who knows? Anyway, shifting gears again to boxing. Manny Pacquiao had a great performance last weekend, beating Jesse Vargas by unanimous decision.
I didn't order the fight, and I was stunned. Not that Pacquiao won, but he won convincingly. I know we had the second round knockdown, the second or third round, but it looked like, from what I heard, that Vargas was starstruck.
Yeah. Could have been. I actually saw Jesse doing his mitt workouts and everything at Floyd's gym back when he was with Floyd's team. And, he's a sharp fighter. He was up and coming then. He's way before the Floyd versus Manny first fight there. And now they're talking about a second one, of course, like more than ever. But
yeah, hopefully now. Right, Tom?
Hopefully now.
Oh, please. Please spare me. Spare me! Oh.
Yeesh. I think we're getting invaded. I hear a helicopter coming over the house. Man, you guys hear that? It's like right over my house.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, here they come. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, Manny won the fight convincingly, and now Kell Brook is aiming to have a unification fight because, even though it's only one belt that Manny has, Kell Brook has the IBF welterweight title now, and he tried to go up in weight to middleweight, of course, and we know what happened there. Gennady Golovkin took him out last month, or September, actually. So now Eddie Hearn, who is Kell Brook's promoter, is in touch with Manny's promotion team to discuss the fight. And looks like he's going to go back down to welterweight. And Bob Arum has agreed that it would make a great fight. But Errol Spence is another possibility for Kell Brook. So, one or the other is probably going to take the bait there and go for that fight. But I really, I think Manny would pretty much handily take Kell Brook. After watching the Gennady Golovkin fight, obviously you have a blueprint on how to beat the guy. So,
right.
It's just a matter of, how much can he improve in how little time. So we'll see, but this is the greatest part of this article. I laughed out loud when I read this. Just because Floyd Mayweather Jr. came to the fight, that Bob Arum now thinks that he's going to have a rematch. So he says, he told ESPN, like everyone else, I'm guessing there will be a rematch. He did come to the fight. I give it 75%. Do I know it's going to happen? No. Do I know if Floyd wants the fight? No. I know nothing more than the public knows at this point and what I observed. So, Nostradamus is basing his prediction on the fact that Manny went to a boxing, that Floyd went to a boxing match with Manny Pacquiao.
Makes sense to me. Boy, talk about a little projection there.
Yeah, really? Just because he shows up to the fight, did you happen to know that he's a boxing fan as well as a fighter? And he probably bet on it, because he is a world-class bettor, gambler. Anyway.
So often we see what we want to see.
Yeah. I hope that fight doesn't happen. I really don't think that Floyd is going to really want to come out of retirement for that one anyway. And what does he have to gain? He's making good investments. He doesn't need the money.
I just don't feel that the fan base would be there unless they would blame Pac-Man's showing on his shoulder and start hyping that angle of it. But that just left a bad taste in everyone's mouth.
Yeah.
And I just don't, I mean, I've been wrong before about it. I don't know what you guys think, but it would be awful hard to stir up the passion for that fight.
Yep, yep. And we also had a press conference for UFC 205 that was pretty entertaining. From what I've read, I did not watch it, but Conor McGregor stole the show again and stole the belt again. Remember, he stole it from Jose Aldo. This time, Eddie Alvarez wasn't even in the room when he stole it. Conor showed up 15 minutes late, so I guess Eddie went backstage to wait for him. And I said, call me when he gets here. And then Conor walks in with a mink coat on and snatches the belt up. And I don't know what happened when Alvarez got back. They don't really mention that. But at some point, I guess he raised a steel chair over his head and went after Eddie. So it's just ridiculous. Dana White ripped it out of his hands, I guess. And then McGregor said something like, what kind of fine do you think this would cost me? They hit him in the head with a chair. It's just pretty crazy. And, you know, I still can't figure out why Conor McGregor gets all these free passes and just, you know, all this credit for being such a dominant fighter when he really hasn't fought a lot of big names. Really hasn't. I mean, Eddie Alvarez is probably going to be the stiffest test he's faced in a long, long time. I mean, Jose Aldo was great, but, I mean, really, when was he tested at all in that fight? I mean, look how badly, I mean, obviously there was a weight factor, but look how badly Nate Diaz tested him and took him into deep water. You know, if you get anybody at his own weight that is that talented or better, he's going to have a tough fight. And, you know, he might be getting better and better, but he better not sleep on Eddie.
Make it a dog fight.
Yeah, he better not sleep on Eddie. Because Eddie is hungry, and he really has a little bit of an inner hatred for the whole Conor McGregor thing. I mean, you got to think about it. He's seen things from Bellator's side now and the UFC. He's been in two different organizations that are at the top of the heap. So he understands the sport of mixed martial arts very well. And here comes McGregor, you know, who has been in a couple smaller promotions, but just stepped into the UFC and just basically took over without really having to prove much. Just flapping his jaws is what really got him where he's at. And, you know, making some correct predictions here and there. But, I mean, not that he fought bums in the early career in the UFC, but he definitely didn't fight world-class talent. So this is going to be a real test for him, and I think that he's going in with a little bit too much confidence. Not that confidence is ever a bad thing, but, you know, when you have way too much and you're not taking your opponent seriously, that can catch up to you.
So. Well, I think this may be settled on the ground, because if it's not going Eddie's way, it'll come down to Conor's on the feet, which I'm not saying it will. I mean, I never underestimated Eddie Alvarez on his feet either. But if it's not going his way and he can get it on the ground, we'll see how Conor's really doing with his grappling game. He seems like he's a quick learner, but that's going to be a big challenge for him.
And, of course, he's not the only fighter on the card or the only fight on the card. It's kind of funny because, you know, UFC 200 was supposed to be, you know, the greatest fight card ever put together. And now they're pretty much saying that about this one. So you're basically saying that, you know, opening the New York MMA scene there for the UFC is more important than UFC 200, which is what they basically put together right before they sold the whole thing. So, you know, that was like their last business card they were handing out to try to get to the big numbers that they finally got. So, the co-main event is obviously a very fascinating fight. We got Tyron Woodley, another vet of another organization. He was in Strikeforce. One of the big successes from Strikeforce to come over and actually compete in the UFC and do very well. He comes in at 16-3 against Stephen Thompson, who's 13-1. And Stephen has one of those crazy, unique styles. A lot of karate. but not Machida karate type stuff where it's just all that. He does have a lot of good punching and boxing skills as well that he mixes in.
And his lateral movement is on another dimension.
Right. And he's only lost one fight. The one fight was to Matt Brown back at UFC 145 in 2012. So it's been over 4 years since his last loss. And he strung together a lot of wins up until that point. And that was only his second UFC fight. So it was kind of when he was a little bit green. Anyway, that shapes up to be a pretty decent fight. And Steven is actually being kind of compared now to Sage Northcutt because that's who Tyron Woodley brought in to mimic him.
Well, which was very, very smart. And going with Duke Rufus, definitely a smart move. I'm just going back and forth on this one because Woodley can end this with one punch.
Yeah.
But so far, Thompson just seems like he's on a roll. And my gut feeling is going with Thompson on it. But it's just so hard to do that because Woodley's wrestling skills are superior. See if he can trap Thompson and get him down.
Anybody that can knock Robbie Lawler out like that, I mean, you just got to worry about, for Steven, you got to worry about his chin. Because, you know, he does have a very unique defensive style where his hands are down a lot. And I think a lot of that comes from karate, where he's either he got his hands down by his chest or out by the past his ears, you know. So he's, you know, able to get away with that because of his, like you said, his lateral movement and a lot of head movement, a lot of stance changes, and a lot of kicks, a very kick-based striking attack. And actually, he landed a side kick to the forehead of Johnny Hendricks in that fight that I was pretty impressed
with. Yeah, that fight was a shocker to me. Not so much that Thompson won, but just the total domination. I mean, it didn't even look like Hendrick belonged in there with him. And I've always been a big fan of Johnny, former title holder, but that made me realize Thompson's got something going here. He's got a mojo.
And
do this with
Battle of the Undefeateds in the female fight that's at the top of the bill. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who is 12-0, fighting Carolina, I don't know which way you pronounce that one, Kowalkiewicz, who is 10-0. So, should be a decent fight. But you got to wonder, after Carolina, where is this going to go for Joanna? I mean, she's pretty much beaten everybody there is to beat at the top. So who's going to be next? I don't know. It's going to be tough to find a matchup for her after this. But this is a decent matchup on paper, at least. We'll just have to see if it translates to a good fight in the cage. And then we got the big men, Chris Weidman versus Yoel Romero. Some of the heaviest fighters on this card. 13-1 is Weidman. Yoel is 11-1. And the biggest name opponent of one of our former guests, multiple time guests, Kelvin Gastelum is on this card. He's 12-2, fighting Donald Cerrone, who's 31-7. And Kelvin's had a lot of weight issues and, you know, deciding which weight he's going to stay at. And Donald's just been pretty much dominant, except for that one bout with Rafael Dos Anjos, which seemed like Donald was just bad day, bad time all around. Just was not on his game that day. But everybody else he's fought recently, he's pretty much demolished. So this is Kelvin Gastelum's got his work cut out for him in this one. And his two losses were in his last four fights. He lost to Tyron Woodley in January of 2015 and Neil Magny on November of last year. It's just around this time, a little couple weeks from now, last year. And then, of course, Johnny Hendricks, he got the win over him in his last fight in July 2016 here, this year. And he got a win over Nate Marquardt back in June of 2015. So he's 2-2 in his last four fights, and those were his first losses of his career too, against Woodley and Magny. So Cerrone, I think he's going to have not an easy time, but he's going to be able to figure him out. That's the way I look at it. But Kelvin's gone up a lot in weight too, so we'll have to see how that affects his performance. But he's only 25 years old, so you got to think that this guy's got a great career ahead of him if he's fighting at this level now.
I haven't heard much trash talk from Cerrone, and he can be pretty good at it. I remember when he about Dos Anjos, he said he was going to said he Dos Anjos looked like Frankenstein. He said, "I'm going to knock the bolts out of his neck."
Yeah,
he got pretty wound up. I haven't heard much this time, so.
I just found out too the other day that Donald and I have a little in common. We both were in the area of Colorado Springs. I guess he grew up there and went to high school there at the Air Academy there, and I went to my freshman year at the Air Force Academy. And I think the Air Academy is their high school, because it's you know, usually when you talk about the Air Force Academy, you don't just call it the Air Academy. I never heard it called that. So I read an article about Donald Cerrone this week, and it said Air Academy graduate. I was like, what? I didn't know he had Air Force experience. So I don't think he did, but I think that's what they call their local school. But, yeah, he grew up there. His dad still lives there. And so another reason for me to root for Cowboy. Anyway, we also have another female fight we're talking about. Misha Tate, former guest. She is 18-6, facing Raquel Pennington, who I believe was a former contestant on her team on the Misha versus Ronda episode. So Raquel is fighting her old coach, basically. She comes in at 8-5. She's always coming in to fight, but, you know, she's got great boxing strengths, and Misha has more all-around strengths in every category. So I would think that if it gets too much for Misha on the feet, she'll just take it to the ground and finish it out there. But I really don't think Pennington has much of a chance here.
It's Misha's uphill. Fight to lose. Unless she gets caught, which is possible, but I don't see it.
And it's kind of lopsided on paper, too, looking at the records. Misha comes in at 18-6, and Raquel comes in at 8-5.
But look at Misha's quality of opposition.
Yeah. So, unbelievable. But we'll see. We'll see if it's Raquel's day or not. And then we got a really decent fight here between a couple of big-time veterans. Frankie Edgar, he, of course, has had the belt before. And then Jeremy Stevens, who's been fighting everybody but the belt holder in recent years. He comes in at 25-12. Frankie comes in at 25-1. 20 wins, 5 losses, 1 draw.
That's Edgar's fight to lose, but Stevens is so determined. And just so exciting to watch that he's a light body for sure.
Right. And I don't know how they're going to do like a preliminary show, because every fight on this card is worth the main event. But we got Khabib Nurmagomedov. We talked a little bit about him not too long ago with the title shot issues. He wants that title shot after this, or else he's asking for a release and promising that UFC will never go to Russia. Says he has that much power. But he comes in at undefeated record of 23-0, fighting Michael Johnson, who's been hot lately. He is 17-10, and also an Ultimate Fighter alumni. And we got Maine native appearing, stayed up above us here in New Hampshire, Tim Boach. He is 19-10. Fighting Rafael Natal, who is 21-7-1. And third fight of the night, Bilal Muhammad, 10-1, fighting Vicente Luque, who is 10-5-1. And we got Jim Miller, quick turnaround from his Joe Lauzon fight. He's coming in at 27-8, fighting Thiago Alves, who is 21-10. And then the first fight of the night is another female fight, Liz Carmouche. Challenged for the title a few years ago. She's 10-5, fighting Caitlin Chukagian, who is 8-0. And of course, we got Bellator stuff to talk about as well. Got a Bellator fight coming up tomorrow. get to that. But we also have to discuss last week's fight card. UFC Fight Night 98 from Mexico City. We had Tony Ferguson put on a great performance against Rafael Dos Anjos. Just
that completely was a beatdown. What a monster he is. Wow.
Just completely dominated him. And, you know, they were trading some good shots here and there. And Rafael looked like he was countering well at certain points. But just another situation where it's just, you know, you don't know which fighter is going to show up sometimes with him. Is it going to be the 100% technical perfectionist, or is it going to be the sloppy try to take your head off Rafael?
Yeah, he had a few moments, but it was just, I think by the time the fight got to the third round, it just had that feeling of inexorable.
Yeah.
Tony was just unstoppable, and when he gets on a roll, he's a force to be reckoned with. That division is so stacked.
And Marcin Held got an unwarm welcome to the UFC from Diego Sanchez.
Don't figure, huh? Don't figure. Wow. I mean, I don't, it's just hard to explain. I guess all old men have a good round left in them.
Yeah. And
he's not that old chronologically, but he's been around forever.
Yeah. I mean, he had the right coaching and the right preparation for this fight, and Marcin couldn't get any of his famous leg locks attached, so it was pretty much Diego all the way in that one. And we had another situation where a fighter used the other guy's strength against him. The Ricardo Lamas came in against Charles Oliveira and submitted the submission artist with a guillotine choke. 2-13 into the second round.
Well, that's two submission losses in a row for Oliveira.
Yeah, tough one.
Ooh.
And we had Martin Bravo beat Claudio Puelles by TKO, second round, 155 into that one. Bunil Dariush, who I'm wondering why he fought on this card rather than waiting for, actually that's Bellator, sorry. Never mind that. I was going to say, why didn't he wait for Israel? Bellator is fighting in Israel tomorrow. Wrong company. Anyway, Bunil Dariush, he's actually in the Israeli military, too. He's fighting Rashid Magomedov, who, he did fight him, and he won by unanimous decision, I should say. Then we had Alexa Grasso beat Heather Clark by unanimous decision. Eric Perez beat Felipe Arantes by split decision. And Joe Soto pulled off the big win against Marco Beltran with a heel hook submission. 1 minute and 37 seconds into that fight. And I did watch that one. I thought that was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
He pulled that off. And we had Douglas Silva de Andrade beaten Eric Briones by spinning backfist knockout. 2:33 into the third round. That was a good one, too. Pretty solid connection. And our former guest, Sam Alvey, had a nice split decision win over Alex Nicholson. And that was a tough fight for him. He didn't look too good in the first round, but second and third round, he kind of picked up some slack. And I really didn't know how that was going to go. But Nicholson kind of faded. He definitely did not look good in the later rounds. He just kind of gassed out. And just his style was, it was once it was figured out by Alvey. And he started, I think he landed a bunch of right hooks, just incredible, crazy right hooks, like from distance, that really just almost took Nicholson out of it. I didn't really think it was going to go to decision, but good for Sam. And we had Marco Polo won his fight against Jason Novelli.
Yeah.
Split decision, Marco Polo Reyes. And first fight of the night was Enrique Barzola beating Chris Avila by unanimous decision. And we got one more MMA card, Tony, then we get to boxing, all right?
Well, no, you forgot the main event, Rich.
The main event? Tony Ferguson? I talked about that one.
Oh, that's right. Well, okay, yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. I had my nights mixed up there. I was jumping over to Bellator. Keep going.
Oh, yeah. We're getting Bellator.
Were amazing. I was going to thank him. I thought he was talking about me.
We're both getting Bellator and UFC confused tonight.
Yeah.
But, Bellator 164 is in Tel Aviv, Israel, tomorrow night. And I don't know how the time difference is going to work with that as far as when it's going to be televised. Or if they're just going to do it at 3 in the morning there or whatever the time is going to be. But main event there is Douglas Lima versus Andre Koroshkov. And both of these guys got some major experience. Douglas comes in at 28-6, and Andre comes in at 19-2. So, and hopefully that's good experience, not bad experience for them too. But Douglas is a tough guy. He's had some pretty impressive wins in the cage, and so is Andre. Both of them have, striking heavy styles, I believe. So we're going to definitely see a pretty good fight there. Very well matched up. And then we got the other Israeli fighter, Noad Lahat. He is 10-2, fighting Scott Cleave, 15-6 in the co-main event there. We got Georgi Karakanyan, 26-6-1, fighting Kirill Medvedovsky, who is 7-3. And we got probably one of the biggest female fights in Bellator in a long time, Alina Ovchinnikova, who is 11-4, fighting Carla Benitez, who's 13-10-1. And really, everybody else on this card but one fight is kind of 0-1 versus 1-1, or 2-0 versus 0-1. So there's only one other fight worth mentioning. Fourth fight of the night is Jackie Gosch, who is 7-0, fighting Joaquin Buckley, who's 6-1. Yeah, that's about it for that card. That's tomorrow night. It does not say a time here on SureDog, but I don't think it ever does, so I'll have to look that up later. BoxRec. All right. So we got the Manny Pacquiao fight in the books, and we got Andre Ward versus Sergey Kovalev next weekend. So not a whole lot going on this week in boxing, but sure, we'll find some stuff here on the schedule. We got a halfway decent fight over in, Mexico, Baja California, Mexico. Jorge Silva at Super Welterweight, 21-12-2, fighting Adriel Juzeno, who is 22-13-3. What else we got going on? And then at the 2300 Arena tomorrow night in Tony's backyard, Philadelphia.
Yeah, not too far from me. Like I said, I'd really like to have gone to this one, but unfortunately I'm booked all weekend.
Yeah. This is King's Promotions, I believe, putting this one on. Oh, no, GH3 Promotions. But I think there's another one. Yeah, King's Promotions is putting on the other one at Harrah's on Friday. So there's two Philadelphia fight cards going on this week. But, the one at Harrah's is not so great. But I did see that Travis Kaufman put something up about Pray for My Dad the other day. So I hope Marshall
is all right. I think it was like a bypass surgery or something.
Yeah, I hope he gets to better.
He was in Marshall, and like I said, I know Travis. I know Marshall was in the hospital, and I know there was his heart rate was really high, and they were trying to get it down, and so I know he's, doing better, but, all prayers out to Marshall Kaufman.
Yeah,
I met him the night that we were at the show. I ran into him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we had a little talk. He noticed my shirt. Yeah, I'm going down, so he told me this part. So we talked a bit. Yeah, so hopefully he's doing okay.
And the big main event at the 2300 is Ed Brown, 19-0 at welterweight, fighting Albert Mensa, who's 29-5-1. And Mensa has lost only two of his last six fights. And obviously his experience versus young talent there, undefeated talent. So we'll see how that goes. And we got super bantamweights Adam Lopez, 15-0-1, fighting Carlos Valcarcel, who is 14-8-4. We got Jerry Odom, 14-2-1 at super middleweight, fighting Tanil Goyko, who is 8-9-1. And don't mess with the Zoltan, right? He's Zoltan Serra, 26-10, fighting Derek Webster, who's 20-1.
That's such a cool name for a fighter, Zoltan. It just sounds great.
And then
my next dog.
The one that hurrahs Philadelphia is not too stacked, but the main event's pretty decent. David Gonzalez at welterweight, he is 8-0-2, fighting Samuel Tea, who is 8-1-1. And let's see what else we got going on. Out in Sloan, Iowa, at the Winnevegas Casino and Resort, we got a super featherweight main event between Harmonito De La Torre, who's 18-0, fighting Jose Luis Areza, who is 31-18-2. And talk about a tough go. What is the opposite of undefeated? He has no wins in his last six fights. He's got five losses and one draw.
So, ouch.
Obviously, De La Torre is coming in on a hotter streak.
Well, the guy has one draw, though, you know.
Watch out.
With his five losses, one draw.
Yep. Let's see. And the WBA World Female Light Flyweight title is on the line Saturday in Argentina. If you happen to be in Argentina tomorrow night. Jessica Yolanda Bopp, 29-1. And I think, was it Adrian Peterson? Or was the, what are the Peterson brothers? Anthony and...
Anthony and... Right now I'm drawing a blank. Now I'm thinking Adrian Peterson. Lamont Peterson.
Lamont and Anthony, yeah. They both like to yell out stuff when they're boxing. And I think it's Anthony that yells out, Bop! So I think he might like her. Bop! Every time he throws a punch. Yolanda Bop is fighting Anahi Torres, who is 15-14-1. Yolanda comes in at 29-1. And like I said, it's for the WBA World Female Light Flyweight title. And let's see, we're getting into Saturday now. We got a fight in Queensland, Australia. A couple fights on a card there worth mentioning. Super welterweights Dennis Hogan, 24-1-1, and Yao Yi Ma, who is 15-1.
Dennis, any relation to Hulk?
To Hulk? Hogan? I don't think so. And this one is funny. It's for the WBO Oriental Super Welterweight title. So it'd be funny if Dennis wins that one. Light heavyweight's also on. Other matchup is light heavyweight Trent Broadhurst versus Michael Ludwigsack, who is 14-4. Broadhurst is 18-1. Let's see. Saturday. Oh, I think we find our mismatch of the week. In Chile, only fight on the card. Middleweight, Juan Carlos Alderit, who is 37-8-2. And is for a title. The Chilean middleweight title. Alderit, he's got this great record facing Mirko Manquikoy, who is 6-6-1.
So this is the only fight on the card?
Only fight on the card. Saturday. In Chile.
I hope they get a discount on the tickets.
It's probably going to be a quick night for Mirko. He doesn't have...
A quick night for the fans.
He only has one win in his last six fights.
Jeez, that's one of those ones you want to go in the stands and say, anyone want to make some dough? Get in there. Come on,
just rock on down. Yeah, go backstage and pay Juan Carlos to take a dive. Then go out and make your bets. There you go.
You know, Teddy Atlas said one time something like that happened, that there was something came up and there was a fighter out in the audience that was eating a hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
And he wound up on the card. Boy, talk about taking the fight on short notice.
Yeah. Well, I had two guys in my coaching experience when we were doing an event at the snack bar. Two little Asian guys got right out of the audience and fought each other. They had the fastest hands I've ever seen. And, you know, it was more like a sparring thing. They were having more fun than actually trying to fight each other. But, man, they were throwing punches like crazy. And none of them ever came out to the team. I was like, what the fuck? You guys jump in the ring. You're not even going to try it out. For real. Anyway. Another mismatch here. It's not the mismatch of the week. I don't think it's that bad, but pretty bad here. Mauricio Martinez. He's 11-9-2 at Super Bantamweight. This is in Colombia, of course, Saturday. And Martinez, with his 11-9-2 record, is fighting Miguel Urdaneta, who is 0-19. Looking for his first win.
Well, he needs a win, huh?
Yeah, pretty badly.
0-19. How horrible.
And
yeah,
he's in the main event. He's in the main event. I guess you got to give him credit. He's definitely a main event fighter now. But
well, what do they say? A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Or yeah. I get that mixed up. Or quit while you're ahead.
Yeah. Well, he's got to get a win. It's going to take him a while to get ahead with 0-19 record. Anyway, here's another example of guys who should be fighting for bigger titles and just fighting for little ones here in France. We got Vincent Legrand, great French name, Legrand. He is 23-0, fighting Valerie Yanchi, who is 25-4-2, and it's for the vacant EBU flyweight title. And then we got Omar Lamiri, 17-2, fighting Anthony Bouquet, who is 13-7-2. That's for the EBU bantamweight title. And then we got the France middleweight title on the line between Davy Armand, 21-4-2, and Kamel Abdesalam, who is 15-10-1. I guess this could be kind of a mismatch, too. Joseph Malema at super middleweight coming in at 3-3-1, facing Shamil Ismailov, who is 14-1. It's a tough one. And then we got more fights in France. Another card in a different area. Super Bantamweight's Raphael Pujol, who is... Oh, I thought Pujols was bad, but Pujol? P-U-G-O-L? That's pretty bad. He's 11-0, fighting Hugo Berrio, who is 22-6-1. For a title. Pujols, going for the title. WBA Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title. And we got a couple undefeated fighters fighting for the vacant WBC Mediterranean welterweight title. Muhammad Khani, who is 9-0, fighting Ricardo Silva, who's 13-0. And another fight worth mentioning, Ruslan Fafer, who's 17-0, fighting Fulgencio Zuniga, who's 27-12-1. Let's see. Oh, and a big fight in Germany this weekend. Robert Stieglitz, 49-5-1, fighting Mehdi Amar, who's 33-4-2. Another type of matchup that you'd think be fighting for a world title, but nope, EBU light heavyweight title. And I believe Stieglitz has had a world title before. I want to say there was like an epic fight with him and somebody else that I couldn't stop talking about years ago. But he is a fascinating fighter. He's very quick and stands in there toe-to-toe with a lot of guys. I think it was Felix Sturm. It was a draw back in 2014. Felix Sturm. And yet, he fought for the title back in 2015 against Arthur Abraham, but lost that one by TKO. And let's see, he had the WBO World Super Middleweight title, and he won it against Arthur Abraham in their previous fight back in March of 2013. So he took it from Arthur, and then Arthur took it back a few years later. There's two losses to Arthur Abraham. So he lost to him back in March of 2014 and then again in July of 2015. But yeah, Stieglitz is a great fighter to watch. Not too much else on that card, though. Except for the 18-0-1 fighter against the 18-54-3 fighter. 54 losses. That's crazy.
I think of the 6 years before the 6-7 years before the Civil War, 1854.
And then cruiserweights over in Germany on another card. Ozkan Setinkaya. He's 22-11-2 fighting Lucas Ruzewicz, who is 22-26 with no draws and 2 wins in his last 6 fights. This one's for the vacant German international cruiserweight title. I don't even know how they put that together. How is it German international? It's either German or it's international. How could it be both? But same card actually has a very interesting fight here. Andreas Seidon at heavyweight. He is 44-11 fighting Danny Williams, who is 48-25 and has lost 4 out of the last 6. Danny Williams, blast from the past there.
Yeah.
Maybe he ought to retire for good.
Yeah, maybe. Why not?
Yeah. And the UBO World Heavyweight title is also on the line Saturday in Hungary. Zsolt Bogdan, 11-0. Fighting Rivaz Karalishvili, who is 7-0. So 11-0 versus 7-0 there. 7-11. And then the vacant Slovakian cruiserweight title is on the line there between Gabor Halas, who is 37-17, and Viktor Szalale, who is 19-55 with 4 draws. Jesus.
19-55. Yep. Well, God bless him. Yeah. Keep going.
If you got it, throw it, I guess. Uh-huh. And then another fight in Mexico worth mentioning here. Zulina Munoz, 47-1-2, fighting Carolina Alvarez, who is 12-6-4 for the WBC World Female Super Flyweight title. You got Julio Barraza on the card against Samuel Gonzalez. No weight listed for these guys. Barraza comes in at 15-0-1, and Gonzalez comes in at 11-4. And then a pretty decent card over in Monaco, actually, this Saturday. It's going to be on HBO. Luis Ortiz, 25-0, fighting Malik Scott, who is 38-2-1 for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Heavyweight title. And we got Martin Murray at super middleweight, 33-4-1, fighting Nuhu Lawal, who is 23-0-0. I wonder if he's related to Mo Lawal. That's for the vacant WBA Continental middleweight title. And then we got Jason Sosa at super featherweight, 19-1-4, fighting Stephen Smith, who's 24-2. That's for the WBA World Super Featherweight title. There's only one fight on this card that's not for a world title. That's crazy. Bantamweights, Jamie McDonald, 28-2-1, fighting Liborio Solis, who's 25-4-1 for the WBA World Bantamweight title. And then the one fight that's not a title, Adriani Vastine, 1-0, fighting Antonio Di Mario, who is 2-1-1. And these guys have got to be the least experienced fighters to ever fight for a title. 8-1 versus 4-3 for the vacant New Zealand Professional Boxing Association super middleweight title and the vacant International Boxing Organization Oceania super middleweight title. Unbelievable.
Where does it stop?
Yeah.
Where does it stop? I guess it just doesn't.
And then if you haven't had enough weird titles for the night, we got another one on the line between a couple minimum weights. The vacant WBO Latino minimum weight title. Oh, I wonder why it's vacant. First of all, you cannot find a lot of minimum weights, I bet. Second of all, a minimum weight Latino title. It's probably tough. Anyway, Angel Acosta is fighting for that one. He is 14-0, fighting Luis Seja, who is 28-5-3. And again, you'd think that's bigger than a Latino title. Should be kind of a world title somewhere. Is what it is. Alright, I had to look at Danny Williams here too. Brought him up. I was going to try to see what his last few fights were. Actually, he's got a couple wins in his last two fights. But guess what the records were? The last guy he fought that last year, June 26th of last year, he fought a guy named Pavel Siska. Tough fight for him over in the Czech Republic. The guy was 6-36.
Well, that kind of rhymes.
6-36. Well, he's got one draw, yeah, though. One draw.
Yeah, 6-3-6.
And okay, then before that, he had a fight against Radek Varak, who was only 1-1. Beat that guy by TKO. Big surprise. And then before that, he fought a couple undefeated guys that he lost to. 7-0 and 5-0. That guy we just mentioned, Zolt Bogdan. He lost to him. Lost to him back in 2014. But a whole heck of a lot of losses before those two wins. He had one win before that against a guy who was 1-31-0. And he beat Ali before that. Mazur Ali, though. 10-8. But yeah, he's had a lot of losses run together here. Oleg Moskayev, he lost to him back in 2013. That's a blast from the past. Yeah, just keep fighting.
Well, that was what, 2014 when that fight happened?
Yep. Last guy with any kind of a decent record that he beat was Alfred Cole back in 2011. Alfred came in at 35-15-3 for that fight.
So Oleg is still fighting.
Well, he was fighting back in 2013. I don't know if he's still fighting now.
Okay.
Well, now I got to check his record, Tom. You got me curious. But anyway, we still got fights to talk about this weekend. I'm waiting for that to load. All right, now we got no dates here. What's going on? I guess we're still on Saturday. Oh, I guess I got to change my mismatch of the week. Oh, what is this? Oh, what the hell I stumbled onto here, but all of a sudden I got Arthur Abraham versus Robert Stieglitz. I don't know what the heck this is. We just talked about him being in another fight. Oh, I went to 2015. That's what happened. All right, go back to the box rec. Okay, what's this weekend? 2016. 11.
I got to
reset.
12. All right,
Saturday. Alright, give me a minute. We will find the fights. Okay, we got one over in Italy for the vacant Italy super lightweight title. Francesco Lomasto, 10-1, fighting Francesco Acatullo, who is 9-6-1.
Well, I'm betting on Francesco.
Yeah, I knew somebody was going to say that. Francesco. And there's another minimum weight title on the line. Over in Mexico, Jose Argumedo, who is 18-3-1, fighting Jose Antonio Jimenez. So, no way, Jose. Two Jose's winning. 17-5-1 for Jimenez. This is for the IBF World Minimum Weight title. And we go to Sonora, Mexico, for another flyweight title on the line. Zulina Munoz fighting Carolina Alvarez. Munoz is 47-1-2. Alvarez is 12-6-4. That's for the WBC World Female Super Flyweight title. I feel like I already mentioned that one, though. I think I did. getting these screwed up here. Alright, then we got the WBO European featherweight title on the line. And the Ukraine, Oleg Malinovsky, 18-0, fighting Eusebio Osejo, who is 28-18-3. WBO European featherweight title. And we got, of course, UK's got some fights going on over the weekend. We got Matthew Chanda at bantamweight, 7-0, fighting Duke Micah, who's 18-0, for the vacant Commonwealth bantamweight title. And we got the BBB of C, English super middleweight title on the line between Jermaine Smile, 13-4-2, and Leon McKenzie, who's 8-0-1. Let's see what's going on. We got a decent fight at the top of the bill in Atlantic City on Saturday. Imamu Mayfield, 25-10-2, fighting Anthony Caputo Smith, who's 15-7 there.
Nothing. I saw Caputo Smith last year. He was the one that got knocked out by Garrett Wilson. Tough fighter. You know, they call him the Bull for a reason.
Right. And then I totally forgot about this card. The biggest card of the weekend, pretty much, is another one from Philly. The Lyocoris Center. Javier Fortuna versus Omar Douglas and Danny Garcia versus Samuel Vargas. The big PBC on Spike TV. The last hurrah of the year, pretty much. This is their biggest fight card for the rest of the year, as far as I know. Until they announce anything new. But Javier Fortuna comes in at 30 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw at lightweight. Omar Douglas comes in undefeated, 17-0. Danny Garcia comes in undefeated as well, 32-0, fighting Samuel Vargas, who is 25-2-1. And we got Jarrett Hurd at super welterweight coming in undefeated at 18-0 against Ionit Dan Ion, who is 35-3. Middleweights, Kyrone Davis, 10-1, versus Carlos Gabriel Ozan, who is 12-1. Then we got Milton Santiago at super lightweight, 15-0, fighting Claudio Rosendo Tapia, who is 28-16-4. And nothing else too crazy on that card, and that's pretty much it for the weekend. So, Oleg Maskayev, let's see, is he still fighting? 39-7 is his record on BoxRec, and guess who his last opponent was? Danny Williams. That was his last fight.
Wow.
Got a unanimous decision win and hung him up. And guess where the fight took place? Russia. At the basket hall.
How long ago was it, Rich?
November of 2013. Yeah, he put out.
Sure did have a weapons number.
He went out to 3 fights in a row in Russia. 3 wins in a row, I should say. Mm-hmm. Owen Beck, Jason Gavern, and Danny Williams. Yeah, he was a tough little guy for a shorter fighter. Well, actually, he's 6'3", so he was pretty tall. 39-7. All 7 losses by KO. Gotta give him credit for that. He's either going the distance or getting knocked out. Going the distance and winning or getting knocked out. But he's, you know, been knocked out by some pretty impressive names, given that. David Tua back in 1997. And Oliver McCall back in 1996. His first couple losses. We had Kirk Johnson, who was undefeated at the time. 29-0. Very next fight, he also lost for the WBC Continental America's heavyweight title against Lance Whitaker, who was pretty decent.
Mount Whitaker.
Samuel Peter, I remember that one, 29-1. That was when I first started Fight News Unlimited. Samuel Peter. It's another blast from the past. Now I got to check to see if he's still fighting.
that topic, and then it just goes and goes and goes.
Oh, yeah, he fought last month.
The MMA smaller shows when I know some of those guys.
Yeah, Samuel Peter is actually still fighting. He fought last month. Juan Carlos Salas, who is 6-9. Talk about a decline in opponents. He goes from fighting Vladimir Klitschko in 2010 to fighting a no-name guy in 2016. Robert Hellenius was his next fight after that in 2011. He took a 3-year break. He didn't come back until September of 2014. And then he waited another 2 years for this last fight, just last month. So, well, we'll see what that creates. I don't know if he's really coming back for more big-time fights, but somebody ought to give him a call, promotional-wise, get him back in the United States. He's always a good draw. Anyway, that's about it for us. If you guys got anything else to add? I don't think I got any other
stories. Well, I will say, with the main event of the Bellator card last week, you know, the with the changing of the light heavyweight title, with Phil Davis winning.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about that.
Yeah.
I knew I was missing something.
Yeah, well, just my point on that. Phil Davis just fought a masterpiece. I mean, he was flawless. For 25 minutes, he didn't make a mistake. That Lee McCleary guy was just, what is he, like 6'13 or something? I mean, he's so big.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you're in his guard, he could get a triangle choke with his legs, and Phil just did everything perfect. I mean, it was one of the best displays of grappling I've ever seen. And he fought pretty smart on the feet, too. Set everything up with his kicks. His takedowns were timed perfect. And his opponent it was the kind of fight he could not make a mistake.
Yeah,
right up until the last minute, he was at risk. But what a tremendous effort he did.
And, of course, I'm not too disappointed I didn't get to talk much to Syed Awad, because he didn't get to fight much the other night. He got knocked out in the first round.
Well, yeah, he was, I found out he was going up in weight.
Uh-huh.
And Brendan Ward is a big 170. I mean, he didn't look like no 170 when he was in there, and Awad did. And he got caught in a punch out, and you know, what can you do? I mean, if you're getting lit up and you can't stop it with your defense, you've got to start firing back.
Well, Brendan has said in a post-fight interview that actually when he grappled with Syed up against the cage, Syed said, you know, do you want to wrestle or do you want to bang? Let's bang. And so Brendan separated and they went to fighting and punching. And better be careful what you wish for.
Well, you know, it's almost like don't bring a knife to a gunfight. And that's kind of what that was. Well, I was just outgunned, but he gave it everything he had. He has nothing to be ashamed of. But he went out in his shield, but he did go out.
And not a lot of fights went the distance on the whole night as a whole. I mean, we had a couple of the preliminary fights go to unanimous decisions, but That Awad versus Ward fight ended in the first round. Neiman Gracie got his first big win in MMA by submission, of course. Armbar, first round against Rudy Bears.
Yeah, he looked good. He had Henzo in his corner.
Yeah, and just had 21 seconds left in the first round and took his guy out. And we had Javi Ayala beat Sergey Karatonov by knockout punch, just 16 seconds into that.
Now, that was a KO.
Yeah.
That was one of those. Sergey looked just old. I mean, he's 36, but I think he's a very old 36. And when he went down, it was one of those ones where his hands were still up, almost frozen. I mean, you just hate to see that. I mean, fortunately, he was okay, but he just looked done.
And then Hannah Regina Marullo took out Sarah Pyant, who had to hang on for 9 more seconds to get through the round, but the armbar took her out. So then we had Tim Karen beating Steve Skurzat by TKO. Second round on that one, 122 into that one. And like I said last week when we talked about previewing this fight, Josh Diekman is a guy I've seen a lot of times down in Plymouth, Massachusetts, at the events there in the small circuits. And now he's up at Bellator, but had a tough fight the other night. He got choked out, rear naked choke, by Tyler King. 1 minute and 39 seconds into the second round. And we had Tyrell Fortune had a good night against Cody Mescal. Beat him by TKO in the first round. 2:22 into the first round. Ed Ruth looked really impressive against Dustin Collins Miles, other than getting popped early and a little bit woozy. He turned right around, though, and just dominated the rest of the fight. And got the win by punches, TKO, 3:19 into the first round. And that's pretty much all the big fights on that card. But, yeah, it was a good show. Good show. Till next week, I guess that's all for us.
All right, Tony, you know what your mission is for next week.
I know what my mission is for next week. I was actually talking to a gentleman in the gym tonight, a big boxing fan, actually met me at the Frazier statue dedication last year, and he and I were already debating it. And then next week, I think we should also do a preview on Bleed for this.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sound good?
Definitely.
Actually, we could even...
We're going to be expecting your breakdown here.
You know what we could do, too, is we'll dig up the Vinny Paz interview that we did, and we'll replay that.
Yeah.
Replay that for the show, so we don't have to worry about a guest.
Yeah, I just love the highlights of that movie. Those trailers look great. I can't wait.
Oh, they're amazing, don't they?
Yeah, he definitely.
You know, I watched some interviews with Miles Teller, and, you know, just talking about it. And the one thing he said, there was one part in the movie that they actually had to change up a little bit. And they said in the movie, it makes it look like he waited a couple weeks to about a month before he started working out. And they said, because they did this, because they said it would be too unbelievable if they did the real story, which was he started working out within 5 days.
Wow.
And the other part was he was talking about like how he had to really bust his ass to get in shape, especially for the scenes when he was at, you know, junior welterweight. And he was like saying, like, you know, how he really had to, you know, cut his body weight down. And then Aaron Eckert, who played Kevin Rooney, was in one interview, and he had to gain 40 pounds, you know. So like, for a while, like, they were, like, texting each other pictures of their breakfast, and Aaron Eckert's like, yeah, I'm texting him a picture of a dozen glazed. He said to me, he's texting me a picture of a boiled egg.
Oh, man.
That's funny.
Yeah, that Kevin Rooney, just from the trailers, the guy playing Rooney looked like the real deal.
Yeah, and like I said, when I was talking to people about this movie, and I'm like, you know what, they got, you know, some pretty good names attached to this movie. You know, I said, obviously, Katie Sagal playing his mother, Louise. You know, I don't know the guy that's playing his father, Angelo, but he looks just like Angelo Pazienza. Oh, my God. You know, I don't know who's playing Lou Duva. Of course I'm drawing a blank again. Aaron Eckert, who's playing Kevin Rooney. And I was like, when I was telling people that, I'm like, yeah, Aaron Eckert was the guy that played Two-Face in The Dark Knight back in 2008.
Leave it to Tony to know the obscure facts.
Of course.
All right. He's not only the Rain Man of boxing, he's the Rain Man of movies.
I try to be.
All right. So, yeah, lots to talk about next week, and it's a good boxing action. Ward versus Kovalev should be a good one. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, I did reach out to Swanson Communications, and Richard Schaefer had an article. There was an article about him signing his first two prospects to his new company. I've drawn a blank on the name. Ringstar Sports, I think it's called. And so I put out a little message to Swanson Communications to try to get Richard or those two fighters on the show. I'm excited to find out what he's got planned because, you know, he could be a big mover and shaker in this industry. He pretty much ran Golden Boy for years. You know, he's got some connections. And, you know, he's got so many agreements in place that he can't really compete with them right now, but he can compete with everybody else. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. But, yeah, next week we'll probably replay the Vinny Paz interview and discuss the movie and Ward vs. Kovalev and everything else. All the results, of course. Big stuff. Until then.
All right, guys. Enjoy the fights this weekend.
Adios, amigos.
And have a grand weekend.
You too. Go Trump.